Progressive Radio News Hour with Stephen Ledman, Thursdays at 11 a.m. and weekends at 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome to the Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman. Mickey Huff is on today. Mickey is the head of Project Censored, and Project Censored is just coming out with its brand new yearbook, the top 25 stories of the year. I'm not certain if it's official, but if it isn't officially out, it certainly will be very shortly. I'm unfamiliar with the contents of the book, so I'm flying blind a little bit. Let me make one comment. Well, Mickey knows what's in the book. He certainly can discuss it very adequately, and I'll chime in. I'm sure I've had something to say about at least some of the people included in the book, the protests that are spreading across America, even though I have great fears about what on earth is going on, where it's heading, so on and so forth. Mickey, before I let you chime in, I just want to say one thing. I had to go downtown yesterday to pick up a satellite feed for an overseas TV interview, and on the spur of the moment, I hadn't planned this. I wanted to get back because I'm always behind in everything I'm doing, so I wanted to get back and to go downtown and go back and be on a half-hour program takes about 90 minutes for me. And so that's a good chunk of time. I mean, I'll do it anytime they ask. But on the spur of the moment, I decided I want to go down and see what Occupy Chicago looks like. It turned out it was about three or four very long downtown Chicago blocks from where I was. But I asked whether people knew about what was going on. They said, yeah. I said, where? And they pointed me in the direction, and I headed down there. And I joined the protest, spent some time down there. Couple of quick comments. It was only one day, although it was a Saturday, when I would think more people might be available to come on out and join. The crowd was small. I would say a few hundred. There was no organized anything. No setup for people to address the assemblage on the issues that protesters are concerned about. I talked to a number of people in small groups, twos and threes. I did that for a while. I met somebody who I don't think was an organizer as such. I'm not certain if anyone has that designation, but somebody who seemed to know what was going on, talked about assemblies to take place. I mentioned my new book to everybody. I asked to be invited to one of these assemblies because I know from everything I've read and have written about in about five articles now, nobody is addressing the single most important core topic, and that's the power of money in private hands. If that problem doesn't get fixed, nothing else will, except cosmetic changes. I keep repeating that over and over again. It's true. Money power is the supreme power. Unless the public gets it back, as the Constitution mandates, Article 1, Section 8, then any changes that may come will be cosmetic at best. These people will lose the battle, besides all the other headwinds they're facing. And those headwinds are enormous. Enormous. Anyway, that's not in the Project Censored book this year. Maybe it'll be there next year. Mickey, welcome.
Stephen, thanks so much for having me. It's a delight to be back. It's been some time, but I'm very happy to be on with you today.
Oh, it has been some time. I know a couple of times I think we were scheduled and you had something or other come up, whatever it was. Peter Phillips, I know at least once subbed for you, former head of Project Censored, and he comes on this program anyway. So we didn't miss a beat, Mickey, but we got you back today.
Yes, it's very good to be here, and you are correct. Censored 2012 is out. The official release date from our publisher, Seven Stories Press, was October 4th. So the book is available, and I will be sure that you get your copy, Stephen.
Oh, marvelous.
Yes, we're a little behind. We switched, Seven Stories Press has switched over to a different distributor, so they're actually using Random House now, which we're We're hoping that the book will get into more hands, but we'll have to see how that works.
It certainly needs to get into as many hands as possible, Mickey, and as you know and I know and regular listeners to this program know, real information on the most important issues people know about is in very short supply unless people will take the trouble to go online, listen to programs like this and yours. And I understand now you're on the Progressive Radio Network. Is that brand new, I guess?
That is brand new. We've been talking about that for some time. Peter and I have, Peter Phillips and I have had a show on KPFA, Pacifica's flagship network, since last December. We're on Friday mornings at 8 a.m. Pacific time, and of course we're archived, but PRN is going to pick us up, and we're going to see where that goes and see how that develops. We're very happy to be on board with the likes of you and many other hosts and commentators, for sure.
PRN really does a tremendous job, Mickey. It really is just... the people involved, the programs, I feel honored that they've asked me to come on. Adding you is just another jewel in their crown to get the more vital information on. And again, I mean, this stuff, people need to know this. Who better to supply vital information than the font of it at Project Censored? Maybe that's a good way to say it. I mean, Project Censored is right in the middle of the most important stuff. Mickey, again, this is so vital, and your role is so central, and Peter's before you, and you're both still involved with the Media Freedom Foundation. I can't get it out. Partners in Truth. That might be a good way to describe both organizations.
Yeah, the Media Freedom Foundation is our nonprofit that oversees Project Censored. We're also we have our Media Freedom International site. We have our Daily Censored blog that's run by our webmaster, Adam Armstrong. That's dailycensored.com. We, and of course, Media Freedom International catalogs our stories and research and longer chapters and investigative reports and studies that we do. And we've taken on the fair share of the common heritage to work on a commons project, because one of the most censored stories of modern times is the fact that people have the rights of the commons. They have the right to the commons share of human heritage, knowledge, information, the right to life, to live peaceably in the environment. These are huge issues, and we act as if, you hit the nail on the head in the introduction, this privatized co-optation of the commonwealth is a theft of just epic magnitude. And we're really trying to call attention to it in as many ways as we can, not just by talking about underreported or censored news stories, but just talking about how certain themes, topics, and clusters of stories, if you will, that's how we've ranked some of the stories this year in censored news clusters, there's a trend to it. There's a pattern to it. There are certain types of stories that the corporate established media do not want people to know about. They don't want to have people know about what's really going on. I know you mentioned sort of the disheveled nature of the Occupy Wall Street protest in Chicago, but the theme, the message that you underscored, I think, is there and is visible. It's just being obfuscated. That those marches and protests aren't being covered by the corporate press. If they are, they are being framed as being really chaotic. Even if you go and interview some people or talk to some people in the crowd, they seem to have plenty of intelligent things to say, but they don't seem to, you know, to end up on the front page of the New York Times or the Chicago Tribune.
No, they sure,
and
they sure don't. There's no doubt in my mind that the ordinary people who show up, they're upset. They know a good deal about what's wrong. They know how they've been harmed personally, or their friends, or their family members or neighbors. They know, and they can speak about them and articulate specifics. I mean, this is real stuff. I mean, these people want real change.
And they're not going to get it through Republicans and Democrats. That's for sure. They're not going to get the change that way.
Oh, they'll never get it that way.
The corporate media does its best to try to frame the solutions to problems in a way that utterly supports the established order. There will be no changes. It'll be a different face of Goldman Sachs that comes in. as we've seen for the last several years. And again, I think really what you're talking about and what we've said at Project Censored are really the same, whether talking about media reform or banking reform or reforming our foreign policy. I mean, let's stop kidding ourselves. You know, we need to move beyond reform, and that's one of the main themes behind Censored 2012 is moving beyond reform. And we're not the first, of course, Stephen, as you know, to notice these things. Elizabeth Cady Stanton in the mid-19th century said, "Reformers who are always compromising have not yet grasped the idea that truth is the only safe ground to stand upon." And the truth of what's going on with Wall Street that you expressed earlier, that has to be leading front and center. We can't be having a well, let's attenuate the SEC. Let's attenuate this. Let's not let the banks do that. No, instead of occupying Wall Street, there needs to be a movement to eliminate Wall Street. There needs to, and I don't mean that in violent terms. I mean, we need to totally restructure our economy, the way we relate to each other as human beings in a purportedly egalitarian society. Thomas Jefferson himself said, going back to the founding of this country, and you go back into the 18-teens, Jefferson said he believes that banking establishments are more dangerous than standing armies, and that the principle of spending money to be paid by posterity in the name of funding is but swindling futurity on a large scale. So he talks about government debt spending, and he talks about collusion with banks as being a core problem that will threaten any hopes of this republic achieving its actual democratic principles. And lo and behold, almost 200 years later, here we are.
Well, Mickey Jefferson, I quoted Jefferson in two interviews that I had on the protest. I've had three so far. I hope I get more. This stuff needs to be screamed from the rooftops. I've got my fifth article on this general issue, including the Stop the Machine occupation of Washington. Yeah. Well, another one. I mean, there are committed people, I hope many, who decided they are going and they're not leaving until their demands are met. That's strong statements. I heard somebody say he bought a one-way ticket because he's going to sleep over. He's camping out. They have come. They've come to stay, and they're going to stay until their demands are met. Well, I hope a lot more feel exactly the same way. In my article tomorrow, not only Jefferson, Mickey, I quoted Lincoln worrying more about the bankers who were coming after him than the Southern Army. I quoted Andrew Jackson, who called the Bank of the United States a sort of equivalent of the Fed today, a hydra-headed monster. He referred to bankers as vipers. Vipers. I mean, he literally wanted to plunge a dagger in their heart. So Lincoln hated them. Madison called them money changers. I forget, maybe Roosevelt called them that too. I'm sure not with the same conviction.
Well, Wilson had some things to say about the Fed, and Roosevelt, of course, had many problems with the banks. But in some ways, these, particularly in the 20th century, the so-called reformers, potentially with some of their good intent. I can't certainly ascribe or proscribe all good intent to these people because they are, again, part of the establishment core 1% of people that control what happens in this country and control the money and the resources and the messages and the propaganda and then, hence, ultimately, the mind of the public. These reforms weren't meant ever only to be reforms. Roosevelt boasted Franklin about saving capitalism in 8 days. He had no intention on derailing or getting rid of the capitalist system. And quite frankly, another issue at the core of Wall Street, of the whole Wall Street scandals, is the problem of capitalism. Just the problem of unregulated capitalism, but just period, the historical critiques and problems that go along with capitalism. And in our educational structure and in our corporate media structure, given that no one's allowed essentially to have a sober analysis or critique of capitalism, we dance around these problems, and I say dance because we do this reform kind of thing, which is dancing with the establishment, dancing with the power structure, you know, and feeling like, well, we get to lead for a while, and then they lead for a while, and that's just complete nonsense.
Well, it is complete nonsense. And the usual kind of reform we get, Mickey, is the kind that comes in healthcare reform, financial reform, this kind of reform, that kind of reform, legislation written by the industries the legislation affects.
The lobbyists and
the lawyers. Well, the lobbyists working for the big drug companies, the big insurers, the big banks, all of the big corporations that absolutely manipulate the Congress. Well, they bribe the Congress. They get them to legislate the laws and the regulations they want, eliminate the ones they don't want. What kind of reform is that? Reform really has a very nasty connotation to it. I've gotten to despise that word, Mickey.
I often interchange, as do others, the letter R for the letter D, and we have deform.
That's exactly right.
It's healthcare deform. It really shifts, maybe contorts, changes a few things, but what it's really doing is attenuating the stage for, you know, the next series of undetectable swindles. You mentioned lobbyists, opensecrets.org. We've covered their work for a number of years. In our 2010 book that Peter and I did with Project Censored, this is riveting. I mean, if you take a look at the amount of money that lobbyists are spending, special interest paid Washington $3.2 billion in 2008, which was more than any other year on record. It was a 14% increase from 2007, which already broke the previous year's record by over 7%. So the Center for Responsive Politics had been, again, looking at this and calculating it, and they deciphered that in 2008, and again, this was when they had the recent figures. This is from a book that we did 2 years ago. In 2008, $32,500 were spent per legislator per day, right? That Congress is in session on lobbying. The federal government is handing out billions of dollars by the day, and this translates into job security for lobbyists who can help promote companies and industries get a piece of the payout. And that's exactly the kind of stuff that we saw in the TARP, the same kind of business we've seen in bailouts, the same kind of reckless, and I say reckless not for their own interests, the bankers. I say reckless for democracy, reckless for the public. They're acting in the best interest of their shareholders, and that's their view. And, again, that type of really just ritual abandonment of the notion of the commons and the rights of the people, and that kind of avarice and arrogance really can't last historically. At some juncture, people rise up. People say enough is enough. And that doesn't necessarily equate to hope and change you can believe in, because Americans were really swindled with that elixir in 2008, and here we come up to 2012, and I don't know how many folks are paying attention to some of what's happening in the Republican Party, but Ron Paul is consistently finishing in the upper three and winning straw polls. And I mean, I don't say that as someone that is a supporter of Paul, or I'm not telling other people to be supporters of Paul. That's up for people to decide. But getting a fair shake in the media is something Paul hasn't been able to get.
Look what Ralph Nader never got. Look what Cynthia McKinney never got.
He was in town and we interviewed him. Abby Martin from Media Roots interviewed Ralph about us. In fact, if your listeners are on Facebook, go to our Facebook page, look up Project Censored. We have almost 12,000 people on there, and we've posted our interview with Nader talking about not just Project Censored, but talking about the history of the shutting people out in elections, like himself. And also the absolute tyranny of Wall Street over the legislative process, and it's something that needs to change.
Change. We've somehow got
for real change.
We've got to get money out of politics. There are so many issues that need to be addressed, Mickey. To me, it all starts with returning money power to public hands.
That's
issue one. But getting money out of politics, as long as lobbyists and big corporations, through lobbyists or directly or any other way they do it, as long as they can bribe politicians to get what they want, democracy cannot coexist with a system like that.
And the antecedent to that whole realization really comes from a true free press structure, not owned by the moneyed classes, but one that is independent and fiercely reports the facts about what's actually going on in the world. I mean, that's the kind of thing we need to see. There's an organization, and I invite the listeners to check out. There's an organization in Berkeley called MapLight. I'm not sure if folks have heard of them. MapLight.org is the organization. And so MapLight.org, money and politics, illuminating the connection. That's what their website does. They go and they take a look at certain bills pending in the Congress. They look at their sponsors and they look at who's funding those people. They literally follow money trails to Congress members and then the bills they vote for, draft, sponsor, co-sponsor. So, you know, again, MapLight, money and politics, light, shining a light into these dark places behind closed doors.
Oh, that's marvelous. That is marvelous.
It's a great organization.
I've given up on the duopoly system that runs this country, Mickey. I absolutely believe that anybody who votes for any Republican or Democrat, Ron Paul included, he's got two marvelous issues, getting rid of the Fed and ending imperial wars.
Two issues does not a candidate make.
Absolutely, absolutely not.
And I hear many people crowing about Paul on the right, libertarians, saying, you progressive lefties, you should get behind Paul. Well, that's an absurd claim, because Paul has really no progressive credentials. He's got a number of views that are odious to people that are left progressives.
Well, he wants to get rid of Medicare, Social Security, Medicaid, all social benefits. He believes that we should have a libertarian society. Everybody's on their own sink or swim.
And including, he was the one saying that we should not have this health care system, and his own campaign manager died from cancer-related complications because he did not have access to health care.
Oh, my goodness.
So ironic as that may be, I think that people that are really illuminating Paul are really illuminating some of those two core issues on the Fed and the wars. And I can get behind that. But why are there no Democrats? there are a couple small-scale Democrats that are not in favor of the Fed or the wars, and you could find some of these people for sure.
But they're not forceful, Mickey.
No, they're not forceful, and they're not leading, and they're not running for president.
Oh, they're sure not. Ron Paul, I don't think he's done it the past few years, but I believe at least three times, maybe four times, he introduced the Federal Reserve Abolition Act in Congress, in the House. Not one time did he have a co-sponsor, which means no one in the Democrat Party went along with him.
That's right. That's right. And that kind of game playing and politicking should show the public, here's the key, if they knew, should show that the game is completely rigged. There is not going to be a discussion about the Federal Reserve, which is not federal. It is not part of the federal government. It's basically a global banking cartel, is what it is. And I mean, but if you speak that way, I suppose you don't really get a lot of attention. And the media is very quick to denigrate those views, very quick to call them conspiratorial. That's the favorite buzzword. If you challenge sacred cows, you're a conspiracy theorist. If you notice, for example, in the 2012 book, one of our top stories, and by the way, your listeners can see all of the top stories at projectcensored.org. They won't see the clustered essays, and they won't see all the other contents of the book. We have an entire section on truth emergency, on propaganda studies with Jacob Van Vliet, Randall Marlin, Anthony DiMaggio, who has written some really great work on propaganda, Elliot D. Cohen on net neutrality in the surveillance state, Bob Abley wrote another chapter this year on propaganda. There's a lot in the book that's not on the website, so we still encourage people to check that out. But one of the top 10 stories, actually, this year was on the science behind weather manipulation and weather modification. And there are about five or six stories about this. One of them talks about, the more controversial concerns that people may have about contrails or potential chemtrails. But the story we go into, that's not really the angle of the story. We're simply looking at the science of weather modification, HARP. Some of your listeners may be familiar with HARP. And again, I'm saying this because I'm outlining this in advance, saying, look, we're aware that these are potentially controversial issues and potentially controversial stories. But that doesn't mean that they're not happening. And that doesn't mean that we, you know, at Project Censored, can somehow ignore the top stories. You know, Aldous Huxley once wrote in the 1920s, facts do not cease to exist simply because they're ignored. And, you know, that's been our mantra here at Project Censored. This is our 35th year now. So if you go to the top 25 on our front page and you see story number 9, government-sponsored technologies for weather modification. It talks about matter-of-fact issues with the high-frequency active aural research program. That's HAARP, H-A-A-R-P. Also mentioned, of course, later in the story is about how China admitted to modifying the weather during their Summer Olympics programs. And what we're simply saying is that the public should be aware of technologies that exist, how they can be used, and what they do. We're not saying there's some nefarious plot here, technically. What we're saying is that, gee, that's an interesting technology that for thousands and thousands of years people have not had. I wonder what can happen with that. I wonder who's going to use that. I wonder what the science is behind it. And we have global research articles. We have EU Times articles. We have an article from the Agricultural Defense Coalition. So, again, you know, I would hardly consider these so-called crackpot or conspiratorial publications. But, again, that's the way that the big media try to frame controversial issues, if they try to shoot the messenger, whether it be Julian Assange or Bradley Manning or, you know, well, Project Censored. You know, even the article in the San Francisco Bay Guardian kind of poked holes at us a little bit. Because, oh, they still talk about 9/11 on the 10th anniversary, and they still talk about some of these other issues. Well, that's because we're not trying to win popularity contests, and we're, you know, we do need people to support and buy books and so forth, but we're not going to attenuate the content of our publications to suit some you know, what people think is correct or incorrect. We have a rigid basis for our media.
Maybe a good definition of controversial would be touching the most hot button nerves, the most sensitive truths that the big money control, the big corporate control, major media won't go anywhere near these things because it's too painful to reveal the truth. Peter Dale Scott talks about deep politics, the disturbing truths that are too embarrassing, too dangerous to let the public know about any of this stuff.
And
so you keep it hush-hush.
If your listeners are interested, if you go to the top our top 25 stories this year, story number 13 is, will a state of emergency be used to supersede our Constitution? And it includes continuity of government, the state of emergency superseding the Constitution by Peter Dale Scott. It also includes some legal material that comes out of the Congress about the U.S. preparing for civil unrest. Source Watch talks about establishing martial law. And we also have another piece from Peter Dale Scott, War, Martial Law, and the Economic Crisis, which is from Michel Sosadowski's book. So these are real issues and real stories. And again, you know, Peter Dale has been criticized. Oh, that continuity of government, deep state, deep politics stuff, that's just rabbit hole lingo for people that are, on the extreme end of political science or something.
Well,
and I would argue that's, in fact, not the case.
Oh, it's not at all. Mickey, we need to take a break. I wrote about continuity of government, COG, a couple of times. I mean, you can get stuff right from the horse's mouth and quote verbatim on what this conspiracy is, in their words, the people who actually crafted it. Oh, dear. Anyway, painful truth. Let's take a quick break, and we will be right back.
To a progressive moment on the Progressive Radio Network. That was a progressive moment. You know you can't have just one. only on the Progressive Radio Network.
Tune into Philosophy Talk, the program that questions everything.
Except your intelligence.
Coming up from the minds of babies.
Can studying the minds of the youngest among us help us to solve the oldest philosophical problems about truth, consciousness, and morality?
Our guest is Allison Gopnik, author of The Philosophical Baby.
Baby, oh baby.
From the minds of babies, next time on Philosophy Talk.
Philosophy Talk with Ken Taylor and John Perry, Wednesdays at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, this is Professor Mickey Huff, Director of Project Censored. Join me, along with the head of the Media Freedom Foundation, Dr. Peter Phillips, for the Project Censored show. We'll be airing right here on the Progressive Radio Network every Tuesday, beginning October 11th at 2 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. For the last 35 years, Project Censored has covered the news that doesn't make the news and tells you why, in effort to be media democracy in action. By highlighting underreported stories and providing cutting-edge media analysis, we can counter the corporate media top-down managed news propaganda. Be the antidote to the truth emergency we face. Don't miss the Project Censored show starting October 11th at 2 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network. Progressive Radio Network moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
October 6th, 2011. It starts here.
Nobody else can do this for us.
We are the last thin line of defense.
Our moment has come.
I will be in Washington, D.C., in Freedom Plaza.
We will unite to demand an end to a system
that puts profits and warfare over the welfare of people.
On October 6th.
We're not
October
leaving. However many days, however many
weeks. Peaceful revolution.
October2011.org. It starts here.
We will be heard.
This is PRN, Progressive Radio Network, your voice for independent views.
Welcome back. On with Mickey Huff. Mickey is the head of Project Censored. Project Censored just may be the most important organization in the country representing people to get out. Certainly, it's the most important to get out real information on the most cutting-edge issues, domestic ones, global ones, the big stuff that everybody needs to know about because these things touch our lives directly, whether we realize it or not. Even one the top story is an important story, Mickey. I'm surprised it made number one. I've never written a separate article on suicides in the military, U.S. military, but I've certainly mentioned it a couple of times in articles that I've written. Haven't done it for a while, but the numbers are there, and I guess they don't include, Mickey, the numbers that expire one way or another after they get out of the service and go home because nobody pays any attention to them anymore.
Stephen, that's right. The story is more U.S. soldiers killed themselves than died in combat, and that is essentially what got it on the radar. It's clearly an important story of what's happening to not... And by the way, I want to say not just an important story of what's happening to America's citizens, to America's soldiers, etc., but, of course, what's happening to the Iraqi people. Over a million dead Iraqis was one of our top-censored stories. Still could be one of the most top-censored stories. That story has just vanished. So as far as human life goes, you know, there's pretty much reckless disregard across the spectrum by the corporate media in this country. This story on the troops lost to suicide, you know, it was reported in Congress.org. It was reported Congressional Quarterly. It was reported by Good Magazine. Chris Hedges of Truth Dig. Chris Hedges wrote about it. And again, some said, yeah, it's odd that it gets there. And I've long said that the rankings of the stories and the judges of Project Censored, that's kind of there. You know, their ideas about what's important and so forth. I think all the stories are really important, and we should look at all of them. But what I can tell you that what got this story on the radar was the fact that 468 soldiers committed suicide versus 262 that died in combat. This was the second year in a row of this trend going through 2010. And, one of the generals told the Army Times, if you know the one thing that causes people to commit suicide, please let us know.
I'll tell you the one thing that causes them to commit suicide. Sending them into wars to get their brains blown out by people who hate the fact that America showed up, not to liberate them, but to make life harder than ever for them because of the occupation and the bombings and the dronings and the death squads. I mean, that will get any soldier fed up. And then when you send them back again and send them back again and send them back again, I mean, some of these kids get deployed 4, 5, 6 times. I don't know how anybody can live through that.
Well, we don't either, and that's really why we thought the story was really important. You know, this comes from one of our best and most participatory Project Censored affiliates, Professor Ken Burrows at San Francisco State University, who also did another really great story, the U.S. Army and Psychology's largest experiment ever, talking about the comprehensive soldier fitness. And talking about how this is an emphasis on positive psychology, a holistic approach to warrior training. I mean, this is so absolutely absurd, and it's such a complete bastardization of what we think of when we say holistic and so forth. This was, again, written about by Mark Pelosuk, Jason Leopold. Not the big publications, of course, but, you know, really looks at what's going on here. How are America's young people that are in the armed services, how are they being indoctrinated? How are they being propagandized? How are they being brainwashed? How are their concerns being glossed over? How is their treatment and care? How is it after they leave and come home and are essentially abandoned and the VA can't even keep up with all these people? Some of your listeners will remember that it's the Bush administration that actually was cutting the VA, the Veterans Administration, during the occupation. Well, these are ongoing, but Bush was cutting the Veterans Administration and cutting the budgets to deal with veterans and so forth. And it's absolutely disgraceful. This is the same kind of treatment, by the way, that the first responders get from Ground Zero on the 10th anniversary. This is the same kind of treatment they got when there was no health care coverage to cover the many cancers and maladies and ailments. So these people are being hung out to dry. They're pawns for the establishment. They're photo ops for politicos and other elites in the society when they want to look good and propagandize in the papers and on the news, so-called quote-unquote. But then when their real concerns come up, they're ignored. They're kicked to the side. And that's exactly what we're doing with soldiers and with veterans, and that's why that story is there, along with the other stories about psychology and brainwashing and these kind of things, that we're really wrecking not just a generation of people in Afghanistan and Iraq. You know, we're doing it right here at home.
Oh, we are doing it right here at home. World War One destroyed a generation of youth. World War Two did it again. Vietnam did it again. Post 9/11, we've wrecked aside from what we've done to the countries that have been invaded and occupied. We destroyed them. Iraq no longer exists. Afghanistan is a much bigger territorial country than Iraq. It basically doesn't exist. Although Afghanistan has been ravaged by war for decades, even before the 1980s, but one decade after another. I mean, talk about an endless war and the horrors those people they have lived through. They just have to hate everything outside their borders, because all they do is come in and ravage them again and again and again. And then you just take U.S. youth and the other main NATO partners. I mean, a generation of youths in these countries being destroyed, the people that have gone into the military. How does a country live with itself? Well, as you know, Mickey, and I know, I mean, this country alone, we can speak mostly about America. America simply doesn't give a damn about human life, whether it's an Iraqi or an American or anybody. Human lives are to be exploited, to be used for imperial dominance, for greater wealth, for resource exploitation. That's what it's all about. Doesn't matter how many corpses pile up to achieve these things. They're inconsequential. Look what we've done to Libya, Mickey. I mean, we turned Libya The phrase hit me on one article. I've used it several times. We turned Libya into a charnel house. Into a charnel house. I mean, we've ravaged. I estimated, I mean, nobody knows how many people have been killed, but of all the stuff I've run across, and I wrote over 50 articles on Libya, in the last week or so I wrote two more. I'll come back to it again, because it's so important. Number one, the war is far from won. The Libyans are actually prevailing over the cutthroat rebels on the ground, but nobody wants to talk about it. Most of Tripoli is waving the Gaddafi green flag, solid green banner with no insignia on it, only one like it in the world. 97% of people, it's estimated, support Gaddafi. 97% support Gaddafi, some tyrant. They absolutely despise NATO. They despise the West. They despise these so-called rebels. These so-called rebels are enlisted, they're funded, they're armed insurgents. There's no
some
revolution
in
Libya. There's an invasion of Libya.
And Langley.
Well, Mickey, the best estimate I could come up with was, and I did this weeks back, that at minimum 100,000 Libyans have been killed in a country of 6 million. It could be 120,000 now. I mean, dozens, who knows, maybe hundreds are dying every day. So it's the number well exceeds 100,000. And you've got multiples of that are injured for everyone killed. Let's say 5 to 1. America has 50 times the population of Libya. 50 times, Mickey. If a similar catastrophe happened to America, we'd be talking about 5 million dead, 25 million wounded, and countless millions more of grieving family members. It would be a calamity of unprecedented proportions, and yet this happens in a country like Libya, and it just passes right under the radar without a single mention. And the major media, the New York Times, had an editorial I quoted. I forget the precise wording, but they basically said a significant change. Oh, I wish I could remember the title of the editorial. But basically, they were cheerleading this slaughter, calling it a new beginning. I think it was
a new beginning
for the Libyan people. A new beginning,
That's called the liberal media.
The liberal media.
That's called the liberal media. You know, there's a few people writing about what's going on in Libya, and it's a complicated situation, but it's amazing to see so many people on the progressive end of the spectrum talking about what's going on in Libya in ways that aren't much different than the New York Times. I know Democracy Now! Has had pretty unbalanced coverage, in our estimation.
Terrible, Mickey. Terrible. Disgraceful coverage. Disgraceful.
You can say that, right. And, you know, with all due respect to Amy Goodman, who does some wonderful reporting, I just think that they've really missed the story in Libya. Ann Garrison has written about it. Michael Perrenny has talked about it. Cynthia McKinney we've talked to. And they offer very different perspectives of what's going on in Libya. And people like Perrenny and McKinney, I mean, you know, these people are, to the left of progressives. You'd think that they'd get some kind of play, they'd get some kind of hearing, but not on this issue, not on this NATO military industrial media empire juggernaut of a story. They again are, who knows? Is it the foundation monies?
Oh, you bet your life is the foundation money. I mean, let's point fingers where they belong. I mean, people like George Soros fund Democracy Now. You think George Soros is going to stand for anything that harms his personal interest?
Well, so does the Lannan Foundation that took it upon themselves to censor John Pilger's film on the war you don't see.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
For the Lannan, that's a fairly disgraceful move given their history in support of First Amendment issues. And they fund Amy Goodman's Democracy Now, which then in turn didn't exactly cover Pilger's angle to that story. I mean, sure, you could say it's speculative, but, how else can you explain how some of these organizations, outlets, or individuals turn a blind eye to very select stories whenever they have a great focus on others? It's peculiar that there are these, like you said earlier, the third rail issues in American politics, things that if you touch them, you will get burned. Even if you state something like how facts can be controversial is another topic for another discussion, but simply stating known facts about particular issues should not be in and of itself some call for ad hominem attacks, or it should not draw the ire of so many people that should have a great respect for factual reporting, and oftentimes do have great respect for factual reporting. But if you mention the inconsistencies in the 9/11 story, you're a nutcase. If you mention HARP scientific research on weather modification, you're from outer space. If you mention go against the conventional wisdom about the NATO bombing of Libya, the 25th story in our book this year is on the use of depleted uranium throughout Libya. And that's just one story of stuff that's going on in Libya that's not being reported about. You have to go where the facts take you. And that's what we've been doing at Project Censored for 35 years. I know that's what you try to do in all of your work, Stephen. And granted, sometimes it doesn't win popularity contests.
Well, I don't want to win popularity contests, Mickey. There's no way in the world I would ever want to do that.
That's how you've ended up in Project Censored books in the past, and I have no doubt you'll end up in them again.
Well, it was a great honor for me, and also to have a chance to come on out and meet you and Peter. That was a highlight moment of my life. I won't ever forget it.
It was great to have you. It's always great every year to honor these people, and that's really what Project Censored does. It's giving these stories greater legs. It's giving them more longevity. It's inviting people into the system to check out, hey, how does this work? How do these stories get published? Where do they get published? Why don't I know about some of these stories? Why do I know about some of these stories and not other stories? You know, you mentioned some of the other issues earlier on the American culture of sort of this reckless disregard for human life. We have two wonderful contributions this year about that very issue in different guises. We have Dr. Margaret Flowers writing about single payer singled out, how corporate media controlled the messages of U.S. health reform, right? Again, on our theme of moving beyond some of these issues. And we have an absolutely amazing chapter on U.S. birth mythology from Ina Mae Gaskin just won the Right Livelihood Award. It's basically called the alternative, Nobel award.
Oh, indeed.
She's got a fabulous chapter here on censorship of the true state of maternity care in the United States. In a country that has the most expensive and touted technological health care system in the world, why do we have one of the worst rates of infant mortality? Why do we not even record maternal deaths? Why are we repeatedly denigrating natural childbirth to get people on the treadmills of HMOs and vaccines and all these other kinds of things? I mean, I'm not dumping all vaccines down in some conspiratorial river, but what I'm saying is there's such an unquestioning element behind people that have health care coverage in this country of how they just simply get on these treadmills and do what they're told without questioning, without asking, without being an agent in their own decision-making process. And that's really what this chapter is about on midwifery and maternal care is, hey, women need to be their own agents, and we live in a patriarchal society that has really taken away the literal birthright of women and women's empowerment through natural childbirth, and it's something that gets ignored. It's something that is barely talked about. In fact, some of your listeners may be sitting there with their head spinning saying, what is he talking about? I run into people all the time. My life is a doula. I run into people all the time, and they don't even know what midwives are. There's not even and single payer. People are like, "Oh, that's socialized medicine. That's what happens in other countries that where people are denied care." And then they come up with these outlandish, examples of stories. I don't know how many your listeners are probably familiar with Michael Pareni, his book Democracy for the Few.
Oh yeah.
There's a whole chapter in there on this issue. Just to give your listeners an example of why this issue of single payer was so important, and Margaret Flowers wrote about it. As compared to the U.S., people in Britain, Germany, Holland, Canada, and elsewhere are more likely to have a regular doctor, and they can choose from a roster of physicians. So they do have a choice. This is Michael Pareni talking about this in Democracy for the Few, which actually is in its ninth edition now. Waiting time is less in these countries than in the U.S. No one in Canada or the European social democracies has kept waiting if they need emergency care. No Danes, Swedes, Germans, Britons, Finns, Norwegians, Belgians, French, or Canadians are ever plunged into debt or bankruptcy because of medical bills. Guess what? Number one cause of personal bankruptcy in the United States is healthcare costs. Even
exactly.
Among people that have coverage and benefits. This is again a story, a swindle, a fraud of epic proportions. It's the same kind of stuff that we see going on with the banksters and with Wall Street speculative trading and the mortgage bubble and so forth. We're being fleeced.
One day at a time, Mickey,
and that's in fact the title of your book.
Mickey, I would add, if we could have socialized bailouts and other corporate handouts, we could have socialized education, socialized health care, socialized other vital social benefits.
I would say we could pay
for them multiple times over and then some if we got rid of those socialized bailouts.
And if we wouldn't spend 10 times more on warfare than the
next
competitor in China.
Exactly.
And, I mean, look, we do socialize something in this country, Stephen. We socialize debt, and we privatize profit. And we have, again, a mass swindle of epic proportions on our hands where the upper 1% is taking the commonwealth of the bottom 99. And we hope that this is just the beginning of a long-standing movement, this so-called Occupy Wall Street. What we need is a general strike. We need a sit-down. We need a stopping of the wheels of the machinery, so to speak. That stop the machine talk that's going on in Washington. Well, you know, sometimes, despite all the technologies we have, sometimes the best action is direct action, and sometimes we need to just stand still until the wheels of the machine grind to a halt and the people in power begin to remember who really has the power in a social democracy. And that would be we, the people, Stephen.
Well, that's right, Mickey. One of the Chicago protesters yesterday said to me, I think we really need a little civil disobedience. And I said, I think we need a hell of a lot of it. And I'll quote, a hell of a lot of it nonstop. I don't mean burning down buildings and shooting people.
Of course not. I
mean the kind that Henry David Thoreau thought was a good idea and other notable figures in history. If you don't shake these bastards up, you just don't get their attention. I'll quote Lynn Stewart, my friend Lynn Stewart, famous human rights lawyer, sent to prison for 10 years for representing the wrong client that the government wanted to put away for life. They put away her client for life, and they put her away for 10 years for doing her job. And she says all the time, including from prison, quote, agitate, 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 unquote. Well, I'll put an exclamation point on that, and I would say agitate like hell right in their face and don't stop. And I mean, get their attention one way or another. I mean, the only way that the change is ever going to come that's going to benefit ordinary people like us, Mickey, and everybody listening to this program, except my CIA and FBI friends who never miss a broadcast, Mickey. My most loyal fans. I'm sure they've read my book cover to cover. I'm sure they read all my articles. Send me an email, guys. I'll answer you. I answer everybody. But we want to be in your face. Well, I say to them, Mickey, on this program, what in the hell are you on the wrong side for? You guys are working stiffs. I talked to a Chicago cop yesterday on the street, Mickey. He seemed friendly enough. I said he wasn't doing anything. He was just standing around. And I said to him, you're a working stiff. You're on the wrong side. You know,
well,
they could come at you. They could lay you off. You could be on a bread line like some of these people. You're supporting the wrong people.
Let me just say that, you know, the reason that guy is out there, and we know that, and this is Chicago, but the reason that guy is out there doing what it is that he's doing is because you got groups like J.P. Morgan Chase donating $4.6 million to the New York Police Department on the eve of the protests. Right, which moves the protest away from J.P. Morgan Chase.
Exactly.
I mean, these people should be dressed up like NASCAR drivers, man. They should have, like, all the logos on their uniform of who they're bought and sold by, so we at least know who they served. To protect and to serve the private interests, that's what should be on those squad cars. You know, the New York Police Department might as well be the Pinkertons.
Well, that's exactly right. And I hate to be fair to cops because it could be so damn brutal. I don't know if anybody tells them to go out and beat up on people, but of course they go out there because the mayor sends them out. So you get billionaire Bloomberg sent them out of New York,
yeah.
And we have an unindicted war criminal who's the mayor of Chicago, Rahm Emanuel. The guy should be in prison instead. He's the mayor of Chicago.
Yeah, and you know, beware, people. These people, there are going to be agent provocateurs. There are going to be people dressed up saying to do crazy things. There are going to be people that are moles, if you will, counterinsurgent types, people working in collusion between the federal government and state and local police forces, like they did with the Falcon raids, to try to disrupt and discredit this really eclectic group of people that have had enough. You know, I Mickey Z writes for us at the Fair Share of the Common Heritage, and you know, he's in New York, and he's looking at what's going on there on the ground. And we've heard stories from people that are saying that, you know, this isn't just some ragtag group of anarchists or leftists or progressives and so forth. There's unemployed, there's analysts, there's some people actually that are working in the corporate world that are there that are protesting because they work inside and they see all this stuff that's happening and they know that it isn't right. So this is again a broad kind of movement, and it should be really depicted that way, and we should really, I think that you said at the start of the hour, should really focus on what the problems are here, and it's the unholy alliance, as the progressive era journalists would call it, between big business and politics. And we got to get the money out. We got to really, quote unquote, share the wealth. Look, we're sharing the wealth because it's our commonwealth. It's been taken away by these upper tier corporations and banks. By the way, the whole history of this was written about in 2002. David Bollier's book, Silent Theft, Private Plunder of Our Commonwealth. Your book on how Wall Street fleeces America. Look, this should be required reading. And, you know, we at Project Censored, projectcensored.org, that's our goal. We're trying to help spread the word. We believe people have a right to know. Whatever views they end up having, they have a right to know what's really going on around them, as George Selby said in the 20th century.
Well, that's exactly right, Mickey. Unfortunately, we're out of time. The hour goes by much too fast. I look forward to getting you back to continue this. These are such vital interests. The only people who should not pay attention to what we're talking about are the ones who simply don't give a damn about their futures, about their families. Everybody else, which I would say is at least 99.9%, everybody else should pay attention and know that we're in this fight together, and only we can win it. The big boys on top will do everything they can to bash us. We need to bash them back.
And I invite your listeners to check out the top censored stories and media analysis of 2010 and 11. Our new book, Censored 2012, source book for the media revolution, is out at Seven Stories Press. You can get it at projectcensored.org. And Stephen will have a copy going out to you, as always.
Oh, many, many thanks, Mickey. And again, I look forward to having you back. Give my best to Peter and everybody at Project Censored. And I'll keep spreading the word on this program. I promise you that.
Many thanks, Stephen. Always a pleasure.
Thanks, Mickey. And, of course, join us every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, weekends at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Make it a regular habit.